Hi, this is Bonnie Gillespie, and you're tuned in to The Work.
Beautiful people, thank you so much for joining us. Rosalie Tenset, welcome to The Work. I'm so happy that you could join us today, and I cannot wait to share you with these wonderful people and, of course, for them to get to know the wonderful you. Could you please tell us a little bit about your creative journey pre-self-management for actors? What was your early life in all of this like?
Well, I think to understand like where I've come from, I had a really great career in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And I worked for every theater in that town. I don't think there's a theater I didn't work for in that town. I had a really nice life. And then I picked up my entire life and moved to New York City in 2001, a very adventuresome year to move to New York City. And it was, you know, obviously traumatic at first, but I did start working after we all like worked our way through 9/11. I did start going out to Old Globe, the Guthrie, you know, I was going all over the place, McCarter, Arena, places that I had dreamt of working for, all the big theaters that I had my dreams set on. And then I also was lucky enough to get some guest stars on like Law and Order, really, really nice television gigs starting right away. And then I went and got married and had a child and moved from Manhattan into the suburbs of New Jersey, which was really great for my family life. And then I decided while I did have a baby that I would decide to coach more at the time. And then I opened up this place called the Acting Academy, come work and play with professionals. I brought all sorts of Broadway performers, all the people that I knew that were working on Broadway out. I mean, Annie Golden, Meg McGowan, all sorts of amazing people to come out. And it became a huge thing. Like it became super successful and it became its own entity and really beyond a full-time job. Which I didn't expect. I just thought I'd be like coaching on the side or whatever. And then I kind of hit a point of where did my career go in 2014, where I went, okay, this was great that I did this, but like I started out as an actor. And back in Minneapolis even, I created my own shows. I had my own Mae West show. I wrote for huge other shows that went on tours. I was a writer. I was a producer. I sat on both sides of the table. And in 2014, I kind of was like, I'm done. I must be done. I'm old. Where am I going to go from here? I had momentum before I got married. What am I going to do? And I don't even know, Bonnie, how you came across my path. I don't know how this happened. I don't know if it was an email, if somebody recommended it, if I saw it on Facebook. Honest to God, I have no idea because I don't even think I was a Twitter hooker like I am now.
So Twitter hooker.
So I don't know where you came across, but you had that 10-day get it in gear for the new year, which was free.
Yeah.
Which was a give. And I took it and I had kind of given myself, listen, I'm going to do this. And if I can figure this out again, I will restart my acting career and stay in the business. Otherwise, I'm going to maybe give it up and go make a lot of money.
So I'm feeling a lot of pressure that I didn't know existed at the time, that you were basically in December 2014 deciding, pack it in, acting is over, or this bitch is going to turn things around for me with a 11-day free email program. Do I have that right?
Pretty much, except for the fact, let me add one thing into this. I had gotten a really great manager. And so I had felt, listen, I either have to do justice mm-hmm. and take advantage of this manager that I have right now, or like at this age, what am I going to do? I'm not that I can't be a character actress, but I'm just going to be honest. This is a dead honest. I moved to New York when I was in my late 30s. And if I hadn't gotten any kind of traction by now, like how am I going to compete with, you know, Judith Light and, you know, all these different, because I was being told by casting directors, oh, we bring you in when we think our straight for offer won't go, we need a real actress. Well, that's a nice compliment, but it's not booking me the job because the straight to offer is people are getting desperate for work at this time. You know, people who were doing movies were now doing television that had never done television before. And they were taking the roles that I would maybe walk and enter into. So I was like, well, at this age, if you haven't made it, babe, just like hang it up. And then, and Bonnie, you and I've had this conversation before. I'm kind of a do it all or do it. Don't do it at all. You know what I mean? Totally. Like you're either going to be an actor or you're not going to be, just screw it. You're done. And so one of the things that you helped me see was why does it have to be all or nothing? Why can't I figure out what it is I like to enjoy and really do in the business and manage to do both? And so I ended up probably caring less about whether or not I booked the job or not. Awesome. And just try to find some more happiness. And then I did your 8-week program, which really kicked my ass because I had obviously changed in the amount of time from when I had had the baby till when I had not, you know, on the other side of that. So my type was different. So really hammering in on my bullseye and hammering in on my brand and understanding the difference between the brand and the bullseye.
Oh, sure. Yeah. The type and brand type disparity. And brand. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Type and brand disparity. And figuring out, okay, well, where can you fit in? And then all of a sudden, it, like, as if I don't have a memory bank, I went, hold it. You know, I made the most money I've ever made as an actor when I was also the writer and on the producer side of the table, and I was getting residuals. And I used to do that for theater. Why can't I start doing that for film? Now, I might add, but by this time, my film that I had made 4 films, and this 4th film was winning awards everywhere. So I was like, well, why am I not taking advantage of that? You know, why am I not?
Let's take advantage of this moment. Plug the title in case anybody wants to.
Failure Groupies, which is a short, which has been, I use this term loosely, optioned. I was asked to write it as a feature with a producer and a director in LA out of the LA First Glance Philadelphia. We had won the first prize for the short contest, and then we went to LA with the film, and I had somebody say, listen, we should make this into a feature, which I sat down and wrote the feature for, and we're working on developing that as the feature now. So that's wonderful. And then I was like, wait, hold on, why can't I be both an actor and a producer and a content creator and a writer? Why is that not possible? Clearly I'm winning an award doing it with this and having potential. So just get back to what it was that you were doing before and quit being such a sorry sap. So, and you know, so now my journey is, obviously I'm doing content creation. I created a series with our ninjas. That was one of the other things. I think because before I had moved from Manhattan, remember, where I'd worked with all these people from different theaters and had a real strong connection to my friend base. And then I moved to the suburb where it's crickets and I have nobody to relate to. It's lovely to have the kids that I coach, and I love the kids and I love coaching, but I don't have my friends here. So one of the great things, I think one of the huge advantages of the ninja community, which is the people that have read your book and follow the philosophy, is that you have a community. You end up having a built-in community, which I had lost in the process of moving to the burbs and having a family.
So now you're still in the burbs, you still have a family, but now you have this community. Tell me what it is that you do to maintain the community now, because you know, I think a lot of people hearing this may say, well, gosh, you know, great, that's a way that you can land in with the community, do some of the self-management for actors work, whether it's the free or the structured curriculum that's for a tuition price or whatever. But then how do you keep it going long term? Because we're now talking mid 2015, 2016. We're now, from the time you first started, a year and a half in your self-management for actors journey, and you have a thriving ninja community that surrounds you, and you still live in the burbs, and you still have a family to deal with, and you still have the coaching business. How do you maintain that community?
Well, the community is really maintained online. I mean, we maintain it online, and we meet once a month. The New York ninjas meet once a month in the city, and we share information with each other, but we're really very strongly connected online. and we have accountability with each other. Different factions of us have met up with different people, and we have little different accountability groups. I have volunteers. See, the biggest thing that I think, the biggest mindset change, besides why does it have to be all or nothing, that I got with you was also the mindset of, and this is something that I already knew irritated me in life about this business, that I was like, this feels like such a selfish business. Mm-hmm. But your philosophy of you give four times before you ask for anything mm-hmm. from anybody. And that is like, oh, well, let me go out and spend my four, gives, yeah. as opposed to truly going out there and trying to help somebody. And by helping them, you actually learn in your helping of them. Like, you're already getting by giving. And because the community, because I'm already a filmmaker, people were like, we ended up doing these meetings and they were saying, well, and we happened to be in a space that I was like, shoot, we should shoot something here. This is a great space. Well, then that space got lost by one of the ninjas, but we ended up shooting the sizzles and teasers for my new series, Trending, which I'm... already had in festivals, the sizzles, and gotten amazing feedback from, which maybe go back to the drawing board, even though it was positive feedback, went back to the drawing board and started a meeting with some other people on a writer's retreat weekend and have been reworking that pilot. And in the meantime, I wanted to get that pilot shot before the end of the summer with my liability insurance and blah, blah, blah. And then I got an offer from other actors that I knew from another whole group of actors that I was involved with. And they asked me to direct their series. So the whole month of June, I'm going to be directing a 12 episode series called After, which is about a young widower. He's 30 years old, who loses his wife young. She dies very young. And he basically has to give everything up because he's suffering from depression and goes back to live with his parents. Mm-hmm. And it's about what happens after. And I know it sounds very serious, but it is a very dark comedy.
Oh, I love it.
which is my brand as a filmmaker. I mean, so it just came along because I was already out there with the brand of doing dark comedy. I have a really dark, shitty, bitter sense of humor. And which is part of my brand.
Of course.
And that, you know, it came across that, you know, obviously putting it out there, the energy out there with it, mm-hmm. and some people that I love to work with anyway, that I've been in classes like casting director workshops sure. and stuff with, came and said, you know, would you be willing to direct it?
Question for you. Oh, yeah, please go ahead.
So, you know, and I'm getting paid to direct it. And it's a fully funded deal. It's not a crowdfunded deal. They have investors. And so it's wonderful. I'm going to have a kick-ass crew. We're shooting two camera and it's going to be great.
It's thrilling. I love all of this, especially because it really aligns with so much of what I feel about this business, which is just don't ever stop creating. Just that's the life of a creative is you create. That's the right. strongest muscle you have is make something out of nothing. And not everybody has that ability. And so I think a lot of times when we get down on ourselves about the acting career in particular, it's because we're not doing enough of the writing or the location scouting or the connecting with others to talk about, well, how can I be of service in what it is that you're trying to create? And then that creative flow somehow has a ripple effect that affects the acting and on camera and on stage part of our careers. And I want to make sure that you speak to that a little bit, Rosalie, because I know in addition to all the fantastic work you're doing behind the scenes, I've watched just in the time I've known you, your acting credits stack up a little more. And I want to know how that happens. How is it that while you're working on so many things as a producer, as a director, as a writer, that you're also able to stay on the hustle and hit the auditions. And we should mention have a son who is a working actor and handle taking him to his auditions and being a part of his hustle. How do you balance all of this?
Well, I'm not saying I'm getting any sleep.
Oh, okay.
And I
okay.
am looking older, but the balance of that, I have to say, Wine really helps.
Okay.
But I will say this, that actually each one feeds each other. So for instance, as a producer, I remember the other night I was just like, I hate actors. I freaking hate actors. And the reason I was saying it was I was having to come up with, like, I was given these insane conflicts to deal with actor schedule and going to schedule. Well, that makes me always think as the actor, listen, what can you do not to be the problem on set? What can you do to make people's life easier? And I had one casting director say to me, in fact, the casting director from 30 Rock had said to me at one time, she goes, oh, I always love it when you're in my office because I always know you have somewhere else better to be than here. And
I like it.
Which, what she was basically translating in was I stopped caring. Like, I stopped. It's not that I don't care. Of course I want to get cast. Of course I want to be in these shows. Who doesn't? I mean, that's why we got into this business, was to be acting and playing and telling stories. But when I started looking at the bigger picture, which is I'm telling stories no matter what capacity I sit in this, either I'm writing the story now, I'm acting in the story, and I'm very aware of the fact that I'm an extremely specific actor. I mean, I'm not going to play Juliet. I'm not going to play, you know, I can't, there are so many roles for me. So, you know, I've got to make myself busy in some other way. Otherwise, I'm going to get depressed about it. So to be out there and watching actors come in the room and kill themselves, beat themselves up, it's being able to be on the other side of the table and watching that happen. You just realize, no, this is not about me as an actor at all. So go in, do your job, be pleasant, and get the hell out. Because you're either right for the role or you're not right for the role. So by having that ease and that lack of desperation in the room, that makes people want to work with you automatically, because that's the people I want to work with that come in and they're like, hey, how you doing? I mean, I just heard Margot Martindale talk, which I would not have thought, oh, you should go hear Margot Martindale talk. I had just realized, like, she's my goal.
I'm so, like, she glad. My good.
Goal as an actor. First of all, she's really a trained actor. Mm-hmm. A trained actor. And she plays roles that, to me, are like the most exciting types of roles to play. Sometimes they're small and sometimes they're mammoth. Right? And she is both vulnerable and wickedly strong at the same time. And she has had a career where it's taken her a long time to get to where she has come to. And I'm like a number of years behind her, but I can look at her and say, wow, that's what I want. But that means there's going to be a lot of downtime. And she talked about that. She said after she won her Emmy, the phone didn't ring for 6 months. She won an Emmy and the phone didn't ring for 6 months. That's because that's the numbers in this business, and the fact that she's a very unique type, like I'm a very unique type. So why would I just sit around for the damn phone after that? I'm going to do that. I'm going to get out there, and I have amazing stories. I have a crazy family. I grew up in an insane environment. I have stories to tell, so I'm going to figure out a way to tell them. That, you know, so I've just come to the conclusion that that's what's going to make me happy. And I do like to coach, but I'm coaching privately. Mm-hmm. And when I have the time. Which means I value it more when I get there and I can work with somebody who really, really wants to work. So I only work with people who really, really want to work, and we're both happy.
So the through line I'm seeing in everything we've talked about thus far is that, you know, yes, the caring less about certain things and the detachment from outcome, the telling stories no matter what, you know, feeling that you're coming from a place of service, yes. But there's almost this picture to all of it that is just absolutely gorgeous in coming from a place of I want to be detached from so much because I can talk more about it and be more of service to the story, the less invested I am in what comes of it. Am I getting that sense correctly?
Yeah, because like even in the writing of Trending, which I'm working hard on, I've decided that it's not going to be perfect. Like it's, but it's still, I'm very invested in this character because she's a blend of some of my crazy grandmothers and my mother. And I'm more invested in kind of telling a story of a woman that you've never seen on film. Like you've just never seen this one. So for a while, I got really hung up. Oh, this should really be a great pilot that I could sell and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. I just want to, I want to play it. I'm going to put it out there for people. The people that have seen the sizzles are like, oh my God, I've never seen anybody like her. She's amazing. That's why I want to watch it. And I'm like, I'm going to make mistakes, but I'm going to learn in the process. And if I mean, look at all the content that's out there right now, that's getting picked up.
For sure.
Is nowhere perfect. Nowhere perfect.
But and that's the, please.
Well, that's to me is like, then just fucking do it. You know, just do it. You're going to listen. Had I not made the first three films that I made, I never would have been able to make that fourth one at that level. And now I look at the fourth one that won all the awards and go, wow, that's got some problems. Right. But I never would have figured that out without just doing it, just blindly doing it. That's how you learn. So I don't know. I'm trying to look at it more as process as opposed to end product.
I love that. And I think that's so incredibly valuable because we get stuck in a loop of results, results, results. It makes it a less happy journey. And when I look at somebody like Margot Martindale, an amazing story that you shared with, about her, that if you think, oh, I win an Emmy, and then everything changes. That's like saying, I've been dating the same person for years. We're going to get married and now everything's going to be different. You're delusional if you think that one benchmark changes everything that you've been on a path toward. Because it's all the journey, the journey, the journey.
Right. And now she is getting much better role offers and she's getting paid. I mean, she talked about the fact that when she was on these major shows, you know, she was getting paid $5,000. I mean, this is a hugely famous, brilliant woman that was basically getting day rates and week rates. And I thought, well, if that's all the money I'm going to be making, because I'm not even Margot Martindale, if that's the money I'm going to be making, then I better be producing something that can really eventually get me the big money.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, nickel and diming here and there. So I don't know. It was very eye-opening.
Have you become pickier in the work you sign on to do and the auditions that you will go out for? And can you talk about that a little bit?
I won't go to auditions in Brooklyn. Let's just get that straight.
Okay. I think I've heard about this one.
Okay.
No, you may have to share a little context about that, Rosalie. I'm sorry.
One of the ninjas forwarded me an email. Was like, you're perfect for this role. Okay. And I have Angus with me. My Angus is 8 years old and he had an audition earlier in the day. And by the way, he's doing great. Okay. He's been on Stephen Colbert, Jimmy Fallon. He's working just fine. He's in the new Adderall Diaries that's coming out. The boy doesn't not work. Okay.
So he's offer only.
He's offer only. I haul him with me out to Brooklyn. When I get off, it turns out like it is nowhere near the subway stop. I have to get an Uber to get to this audition that's in the bottom of a community room center that nobody else is at the audition. I sit outside the room with Angus and I'm like, I have to take him in the room because I was seriously concerned about, I couldn't leave him in the hallway. I didn't know what was going on in the hallway. Oh, stop. I mean, they had no idea. This was like really a jacked up beyond student budget type of film. And so obviously I'm not doing anything like that anymore. And I'm actually considering that co-stars might be, it would have to be like, okay, I did a co-star in Limitless. I'm not turning Limitless down. I'm not turning certain projects down that are going to be just wonderful to work on because the crew is going to be amazing. I love the show or whatever it is, or the opportunity to work with people that I want to make connections with in the business that I have like minds to, or I just love the work. But yeah, I just, there are certain things that I go, you know what? That's just not worth my time. There was something that came across today. I get audition notices and it was like, oh, you could do this for, I don't know what it was they were going to pay for the day. And I thought, oh, I could do that. I could make myself. And I was like, hold on. It's not worth my pre-production time. Like, you can't pay me to take away from my pre-production time so I can do my shot list right now to do that. So like priorities, just, it just settles itself. It settles. Like when I had book out, I was really nervous about booking out for nearly the entire month of June. And yes, I got a call from my manager about a co-star role on a really great show. And I was like, you know what though? What's going to be more fulfilling for me going on set and for one day being the ugly cousin as a co-star that nobody talks to, or going, you know, on getting ready for my own shoot and being able to say I directed basically what is a feature. It's 90 pages, 83 scenes,
amazing,
16 actors, 11 locations with multiple. I mean, this, just the experience of that, along with working with these people that I love. I mean, it's really a great group of actors and producers. And I'm just excited about telling that story, which I've never seen on Long Island before. I know Kevin James has a new show this could be on Long Island, but you know, we went location shooting. I was like, you know, you don't see this in television. You don't see this. And I'm really excited for people to see the realities of what a community like this looks. And, you know, it's a millennial story. And I know people have resentment against millennials, but pain is pain. And it's going to be very real and very raw. And I'm just, and very funny. And I'm really excited to do it.
Tell me how, and tell everyone how people can keep up with what you've got going on and what this turns into over time, and people listening to this years from now, website, social media, where do we keep up?
Well, my name at Rosalie Tenset for everything. That's my Instagram. That's my Twitter. And I pretty much put everything. And my Facebook is www.rosalietenset.com. And so you can follow the stuff, what I'm doing on there, mostly Twitter. I'm kind of a Twitter whore, and a little bit of Instagram, where you can also see what Angus has got going on. My son, he's a riot. And that's pretty much where you can find us. The production company that I'm working with is called Two Ladies and a Giant. And they are focused on doing women's, you know, making sure it's women production, women, producers, women's stories. So that's also very cool.
Excellent. Can you stick around for a little Q&A?
Yeah, I would love to.
Okay. Awesome. Anybody who's here with us on the live broadcast who would like to pop in a question, you can either join us here, right in the room, or type it up and we will get into that. I wanted to make sure that I found out. Yes, yes, and yes. Okay, I'm just checking my notes to see if there's anything else. What would be your one core piece of advice, if you can distill it down to one, that you would give somebody who, like, flashback to younger you starting out at this, what would you have given that sweet young girl, and in terms of advice that might have made a difference?
I would just say, trust yourself and be yourself. Like, I had a lot of people tell me in the business, you're never going to make it because you're too fat, or you're not pretty, or you need to, like, even when I first moved to New York, this guy was like, you need to, you know, your hair is all wrong because this is, you know, nobody wants this on the East Coast and blah. And so I think I spent a lot of wasted time trying to become what people were telling me I should be in order to be an actor. And if I just would have balls to the walls, just been like, you know, I'm giving the middle finger right now to everybody's opinions, and just trusted who I was to be interesting enough, especially for film and television. I think that to trust that you are interesting enough, and that if you offer to want to help somebody else, you might learn something by helping them on whatever project or whatever it might be. You know, just be yourself from the get-go, and don't try to fit in.
Yeah.
I think that would be the piece of advice.
I love all of that. And I really hope everyone can sort of take that in and feel it. It's so tough though, until you're on the other side of that, trying to people please and get everything right. It's one of the reasons that I champion the whole launch at 85% in everything. Cause it's like, get enough of your ducks in a row so that you're not, you know, stupid walking into something, but don't try to make it perfect, because there's no such thing, first of all. And then secondly, you'll delay and then you miss out on the joy of expressing that story and getting that experience done. And just, wow, don't block yourself off from that just because, well, this one detail isn't taken care of. A lot of it just works itself out.
Right. And I have amazing failure stories that are like some of the most fucking hilarious failure stories in the business. I mean, Cameron McIntosh kicked me out of his room. So, I mean,
what?
I can tell you, I have lived beyond this, but cause I did, they thought I was stripping. I was doing, okay, this is what it was. I went to an EPA, you know, an equity principal audition.
The worst.
But I went to 120 of them in 1 year. I even went to the Lion King audition. Okay. Look at me. Okay, for those who are listening on the podcast,
Rosalie,
I am white. I am Polish and Norwegian. And I went to the Lion King EPA thinking, hey, you know what? There's probably not a lot of people here today, and I can at least have a casting director connection.
Oh my God.
Rosalie. Okay, so the Cameron McIntosh story. Okay. This is really good. Because you don't know who's going to show up in those EPAs, and sometimes they're really looking. Okay, first of all, number one. It was for like Phantom. And I went in and sang Everybody's Girl from Steel Pier. So this is all like, I can really coach you on what not to do. Like nobody's business. So I go in and I'm doing Everybody's Girl. And because I'm from the Midwest, I was wearing a jean dress that had these snap buttons all the way down. And I don't know if you know that song or not, but it goes, if you got it, why not spread it? And of course I spreaded it. And the whole dress went.
Oh my God.
That was not a choice. That was not a choice. And the accompanist just slammed my book shut and handed it to me. And they were all like this, back like this. And their eyes were this big. And they were like, out. Just out. Out.
And the fun part is, you know, they still tell that fucking story. You know, they tell that story. That's when it's good.
I'm so glad I do not look anything like I did then. Note to self, do not wear snap dresses to auditions.
No. No, I've been flashed in an audition by a woman not wearing underwear and doing a big leg cross dramatically right there. And I was like, okay, hi, wow. It looked like a nice little Sharon Stone moment. So everybody's got that kind of story, but yours seemed choreographed. It sounds like. I think the timing was perfect.
The timing was perfect. So they thought it was a choice. It was a choice. Right. So I've lived. I haven't been thrown out of New York yet. Just out of the room.
Brilliant. Many more rooms to go. Tell everyone how, because I know you've mentioned coaching a couple times. I want to make sure that folks understand, what do you coach? Whom do you coach? Are you open to receiving contact from people who've listened to this and want to have a chance to work with you? What does that entail?
Well, the thing that I'm best at, I think I'm really good at, and I think all my students will attest to, is getting you ready for an audition.
Awesome.
And, audition coaching. And I will tape you for your auditions as self-tapes. They've done very well. People, my students, a lot of my students are younger, but I do adults as well. It's just that when I started the business out here, I have a reputation out here for kids. Sure. So I do kids. A lot of them have gotten representation out of it, which has been wonderful. And obviously because my kid is in the business, I know every aspect of it. And what they don't, I also coach adults, parents of kids, about how to approach the business and not be that parent that therefore they don't want to work with that kid. So I have a lot of knowledge about that. And I do both musical theater audition prep as well as for film and television. And I also do interview coaching. Like if you're going to get ready and you're going to go in for to meet a rep, I can talk you through that.
Speaking of interview prep, we're going to close on some brand prov. You ready?
Oh, fabulous. Bring it on.
What is your on-brand cocktail?
A martini, a dirty gin martini.
Okay. The song that plays as you walk through life.
You know, anything by Queen.
Nice. Very good. If not an actor or creative, a storyteller, what would your career be?
I think I would have been a lawyer.
Oh, I could totally see that. Hell yeah.
I would have been a lawyer.
Good, good. You get to the red carpet at the Emmys. Who is on your arm? Who's your date?
My husband, Tom, who, when he married me, he had only seen me in one role, which was Bunny and House of Blue Leaves.
Oh, yeah.
And the fact that he married me after seeing that and how rough and ugly and tumbly, but yet sexy.
So sexy.
She is.
So sexy. Like, I get it. I totally get it.
That he still agreed to marry me. And the fact that he loves me being in this business. He owns nearly every, I found out, copy of People magazine. How hilarious is that? He's kind of a star fucker. So... He loves the business, but is not in it. And, you know, and because he's been fully supportive of my happiness. In fact, he told me in 2014, before I took your 10, he said, honey, you have to do what makes you happy. Because if it's going to be, if you do what you just did, don't come home again, because it's about you being happy. And so you have to do whatever is going to make you happy. So yes, he would be on my arm.
I can't think of a better way to end this, Rosalie. You have to do what makes you happy. Thank you for doing what makes you happy, because it allows you to share your gifts with the world, which makes us happy. I so appreciate you.
Thank you. I so appreciate you, Bonnie. I wouldn't be doing this right now if I hadn't come across you.
I suspect you would, but I'm glad you're getting to do it with a lot more joy. So thank you for having me along on your journey. I really
appreciate you.
All right. All you wonderful people, thank you so much for joining us for this live recording of the episode of The Work. This will be up on iTunes and over at the YouTube and replay here in Blab. So make sure that you check back and share and rate, review, join, all the good stuff. Get the word out, because we are bringing back season 8 in a major way. And I'm so happy to be able to share this time with you, Rosalie, and everyone here.
All right, my friends, this has been Bonnie Gillespie for another episode of The Work. Thank you so much for joining me here. Please join me over at BonnieGillespie.com for all sorts of goodness between episodes. And until next time, stay ninja.